It's Cofield and Company.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen. Cannonball!
On ESPN Las Vegas.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
Right, here we go on this Friday. Oh my God. So much going on in the sports world. Obviously, football returns last night, but coming down just on my drive down here, word comes down that the one and only, the notorious one, Conor McGregor, is making his return to the UFC, to the cage, in October, in Las Vegas, against reigning undefeated champion, lightweight champion, Khabib Nurmagomedov. We are going to get to that, okay? Oh, yeah. We got Andreas Hale coming in at 3:30, editor at the Sporting News, and at 5:30, a man who was in attendance tonight, you know him, you love him, or you hate him, Adam Hill. He's going to be calling in. We also got RJ Bell at 4:45, but for right now, it is no Cofield. He will be back next week. It is myself, Ryan Big Mac McKinnell, across the way, the MVP of the station.
The ever-cussing.
Mark Seidel. Well, you're the MVP for a couple reasons. Number one, you can't stop cussing, which is just, for me, who is in the lead of the Cofield and Company Kangaroo Court cussing count. Dude, I'm getting really good at that. Hold on, Barry Horowitz, yeah, myself, like, on the back.
That's a tough.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm focused. I'm a professional. You know what I'm saying? Unlike you, who just can't keep his mouth shut and swearing in our studio.
Gosh, darn it.
Tarnishing the fine reputation of this show on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I just love that it happens right before the show each time. Like, it's just your...
I don't think it should count because it's before the show started.
Well, I got docked, I think, once or twice, 30 minutes after the show. As we were casually in the studio, feet up, just chopping it up, having a good old time with the guys.
What did you say?
Actually, the one that I most recently got docked for, I didn't even know it was a swear. It was a reference to...
No, just go ahead and say it.
Hey, what are you trying to do to me, Mark Seidel? But it wasn't an actual, like, it wasn't a conventional cuss word, but apparently I got docked anyway. But you, sir, you were dropping all the good ones. Yeah. Yours are official swear words. But no, when I say you are the MVP, you are the MVP. You got, like, the craziest cold ever. I want you to stay over on that side of the...
I will be... I'll just face this way. So I'm not projecting anything at anybody.
Yes. We also got audio from Zach Smith, the accused domestic abuser, wide receiver coach of Ohio State. Obviously, the crux of this whole scandal with Urban Meyer. He spoke with ESPN, when it's going to be airing a little bit later on SportsCenter, but we got some audio of that. We're going to play that up here in a little bit, as well as a statement from Urban Meyer, potentially admitting that he knew about the 2005 incident, 2015 incident, which he just said at Big Ten Media that he had no clue.
He's a bum. He's just a piece of dirt.
I'm taking it you're not buying the statement.
No.
All right, well, we'll get into that. But for right now, football is back. Last night was the Hall of Fame game. Mark, did you watch? What you could?
I watched a little bit of it, yeah.
Okay.
I did watch a little bit of it.
Well, I asked you yesterday if you were excited for the return of football. You're like, I guess. After seeing the uniforms and seeing the hitting and seeing RG3 and Lamar and
seeing the normal tackles that got flagged for this stupid. I mean, is this not? This is going to be this rule.
Yeah,
it is going. There are going to be teams this year that lose games because of a hit. You know, that is not that bad of a hit. That's going to cost them 15 yards or whatever and put a team in field goal range. And that's there are going to be teams that lose football games this year solely because of this new rule.
And it's so subjective.
It is
simply called illegal use of the helmet, which, listen, I'm all for the improvement of NFL football in general across America.
Making it safer for, you know,
of course,
for the guys to play, yeah.
But you can only make this game so safe.
Yes.
This is a brutal, violent game, gladiatorial in nature. It just is. and you've been teaching. Now, I understand that the idea is to teach a head-up approach, tackle square up.
Yeah.
But in some of these instances, and I felt like you saw that last night with one of those illegal use of a helmet. One of those in particular where he squared up and the Raven hit the Bears, the player in the chest, but it was a bit with the crown of the helmet, but it was very much what you're talking about. But the last few years, it's been helmet on helmet.
Yeah.
Don't lead with the helmet, don't go helmet to helmet. And there was another call with the illegal use of helmet that was helmet to helmet. Now, I didn't particularly like it.
Uh-huh.
It looked worse in slow motion than it actually did on the field, but when you saw it, okay, I'll give you that.
Everything looks worse in slow motion.
Of course. So, but when you look at that one that was to the chest, it just... It worried me from the standpoint of like, okay, like this is where we're headed. You can't even drill someone in the chest with part of your helmet. It didn't feel like he was launching. It didn't feel like he was, you know, darting into the center of his chest. It was just a natural progression of the tackle.
And they say, you know, you can't, you know, launch yourself, you know, leave both feet. And that was not part of that tackle at all.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, I don't... Every one of these NFL football players, college football players, high school football players now know the risks of playing of playing football. They know there's not if there's not a football player out there that is not aware of the risks that playing football presents to them. You know, they know what they're doing. These people are making an educated decision to whether do I want to continue playing football and make a whole lot of money and risk my health and risk my health 20 years down the road. And they're saying yes. They're willing to take that risk. I'm all for trying to, you know, to make the game safer. You know, you never, like Ryan Shazier, you hate seeing things,
of course,
you know, like that. You hate seeing a man that basically had the game stripped away from him on, you know, a tackle that, you know, at the time, did it look bad? No, it didn't look that bad,
right.
But you know, he led with his helmet, and you know, when it jams your neck back in, you know, that's what happens. But I think we're seeing, and I, you know, people are going to take this out of context that I'm, you know, saying something else, but I think we're seeing the end of football as we know it.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they said the same thing in the 70s, right, or in the 80s, where they've I feel like they've progressively been trying to change the game to make it better and more digestible to fans, right? Like, okay, you had the Jack Tatums and the Jack Lamberts, like you the Buckuses. You couldn't have them playing in the 80s and 90s.
Uh-huh.
As much as we revere that style of play and the clotheslines and the the horse collars and the whipping people around by the... I mean, all those things, that was highly violent. And by the time we grew up and we became fans... You know, we idolized the Lamberts and the Tatums and some of those other guys, the Buckuses, but we also understood that it was a different era. I do think there is something to be said to where the game can still survive and a new generation of fans can still enjoy it. It's just how easy do you make that for old fans, and how consistent can you be to not have us sitting here the next day and really across the country of everyone kind of just with their hands up, just wondering, what can we expect?
Yeah.
Like, we don't know. It's so subjective. Like, illegal use of the helmet. I mean, the helmet is such a part of the game. And this goes not only to defenders. This now applies to running backs.
Yeah.
Breaking through the hole, going up the middle, or just going outside. Mm-hmm. And then before you reach the sidelines, lowering your head and lowering the boom.
What they've been taught their whole entire career of playing football. Even in Pop Warner, you know? Crazy as it might sound, I was a running back of Pop Warner. You look at me now, you're like, I don't think that's possible, but I was. But that's,
you run,
you know, like it was. I was taught to, you know, when you're going through the hole, you try to get lower than the defender trying to tackle you, and explode into him.
Yeah. So NFL season got off with a start last night, or got off with a bang, I should say. Go ahead. What's up?
I was just gonna say, before we get into the game, was it me and you yesterday that were talking about rugby? And how we don't see the injuries in rugby that we see in the NFL.
No, but I do agree with that. There is something to be said with not playing with helmets.
Without
pads, nothing.
You take away the pads,
yep.
and it makes everybody else more self-aware. You know, as soon as you throw these pads on people, you throw these helmets on people, it in a way makes people feel invincible.
Yeah.
That they can, you know, launch themselves and be protected. You don't see, you know, rugby is a violent, violent sport, but you don't see the type of injuries in rugby that you see in football. You would think it would be the exact opposite because we are covering football players head to toe in pads.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. And kind of as we talk about the progression, we talk about changes in the game, we talk about emotion, I think right to last night and as we get into this game, I thought heading into this game, obviously I'm focused on the Bears, I'm focused on Urlacher going into the Hall of Fame and any quotes that might come from that. But once the game started going and they led with a man, I'm talking about the Baltimore Ravens, my attention immediately for this game was, well, what, how's Lamar Jackson going to do?
Uh-huh.
You know, what? You know, I want to see what the Rooks got, first-round pick. You know, is he going to be a wide receiver? Is he going to be a quarterback? A lot of questions surround Lamar Jackson. But as the beginning of the game and as I'm watching and as it kind of plays out, I kind of forgot. Oh, yeah. Robert Griffin III is still on this team. And not only is he on this team, he played the majority of the first half, and he played well.
He did play well.
He played well. And after the game, he's talking about the emotional. This is a guy who hadn't played since January 1st, 2017. He's been out of the league for a year in the Browns. So we didn't know what exactly we were going to get with Robert Griffin. But he played well. He had a touchdown. He had an interception. You know, but the interception wasn't necessarily his fault. It wasn't horrible. But it was a big night for Robert Griffin III. Let's hear from him. We got some audio from Robert after the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's his first game. I think he did well. He put that touchdown. I mean, it felt great. I can't tell you how grateful I am to be able to play the game again and just, you know, really thankful to the Ravens for giving me the opportunity. It was an emotional day. I know it was a preseason game. I know it was, you know, just the first Hall of Fame game. But the opportunity to play football in the NFL is something that you don't take for granted. And I'm very excited. And it was awesome being out there again.
This is a guy I've never understood the hate for or any sort of negative connotations attached to him. Like, I've always enjoyed his presence, the things he has to say. And I've always really been rooting for Robert Griffin III.
I have to.
I really have.
I think he's been unjustly scrutinized.
Yeah. Now, I don't know. Listen. The Ravens have two clear quarterbacks. They're not going to, like, cut Lamar Jackson and bring in Robert Griffin III. No. They're not going to do the same with Joe Flacco. And the Ravens specifically, unlike maybe the Bears or some other teams, they don't carry two quarterbacks, and they haven't for quite some time. I don't know if Robert Griffin III is going to be a quarterback for the Baltimore Ravens on any level, but other teams have got to like what they're seeing. And if you watched any of this game, Griffin was on the sidelines cheering on Lamar Jackson, who actually had a really decent game as well. Yeah. He was a little wild. He had a touchdown and an interception as well.
Uh-huh.
He was a little wild. He made one bad play. But if you look at, if you just look at, you know, face value, the way he was able to move out of the pocket, similar to like what RG3 said about, what I heard from RG3 in terms of just being focused and kind of knowing his place and his role and just being very mature.
Yeah.
Lamar Jackson also took a similar approach. And what was his first NFL game? Let's hear from Lamar real quickly.
You know, it was design play. You know, I was trying to hit my target, and I didn't succeed. So, yeah, it happens.
Was there a specific play you mentioned that you can't jog, you're a lot faster here? Was there a specific play?
All right, I was rolling out to my left, and I was getting tackled out of bounds, and I was, like, shocked. I'm like, oh, man, you know, he tackled me. So, yeah, you got to run. You got to run.
So that's Lamar Jackson saying, yeah, you can't jog in the NFL.
And Lamar Jackson's interception was, you know, it was 100% a rookie interception.
Yeah.
You know, on the comeback, he threw it too late. You know, those are things that, you know, you learn quickly how much faster the NFL game is than the college game.
Yeah.
Those are the mistakes he won't be making, you know, in the future. Those are the mistakes you learn from as a quarterback.
Presumably, yeah. And he said all the right things.
Yes.
He said everything you want to hear. Speaking of saying things you want to hear, or maybe you don't want to hear, I'm not really sure. Urban Mayhem Day 3 continues. Everything happening with Urban Meyer out of Ohio State. We have comments from Zach Smith, the accused domestic abuser, and we have a statement from Urban Meyer. Does he admit guilt? I don't know. We're going to get more into that coming up next here on Cofield & Company.
Continue the Cofield and Company conversation on Facebook. Friend us at ESPN Las Vegas. Continue the Cofield and Company conversation on Facebook. Friend us at ESPN Las Vegas.
I'm attorney Matt Hoffman with Battleborn Injury Lawyers.
Now, back to Cofield and Company.
All right, welcome back to a Friday edition of CNC Cofield and Company. No Cofield in
CNC
today.
CNC Music Factory.
You wanna start busting a rhyme? Everybody, wasn't that everybody dance now? It was like
we're gonna make you sweat, right?
Oh, we're gonna make you sweat. That was like the
CNC Music Factory.
That was like the talent show go to in my elementary school. Like everyone did. Yeah. Everybody dance now. The baggy pants, the hammer pants.
Everybody dance now.
Well, I don't know if everyone's dancing at Ohio State, man. We're in the third day of this scandal involving Urban Meyer, Zach Smith, Shelly. We don't know exactly what's going on, but we are getting more out today. First of all, let's just start with this. A statement from Urban Meyer. Now, you've heard from Urban once already this week at Big Ten Media Day where he essentially said he had no knowledge of the 2015 issue, allegation, whatever you want to call it, between Zach Smith and his now ex-wife, Courtney. He said he was not aware of it. He said it was news to him. He had just found out about it through a text message the other night. So today, about an hour ago, we got a written statement that was tweeted out by Urban Meyer. And I'm going to try to get to the majority of this, but I'm going to stop intermittently as I hit on certain points. So it begins, family in the university and community that I love so dearly. When I stand before the 105 young men in our football group program and talk about our core values and doing the right thing and respecting women, it is not lip service. I genuinely believe that we have an obligation to help develop the young men and our men in our charge into positive change agents, and the responsibility rests with me. Over the past several days, I've been portrayed as being indifferent to domestic violence and as someone who did not take appropriate action when warranted. While over the three decades of coaching, I have learned to ignore how others define me. I do feel it necessary to share the truth with the Buckeye family. There's the first part. While over three decades of coaching, I have learned to ignore how others define me. You mean the criticism you receive for having 31 players arrested on your Florida Gators football team?
You have learned to ignore the actions of players on your football team and your coaching staff.
And then when things get tough, you get a tummy ache and you dip.
Yeah.
Okay. Good to know. Here's the continuation. Here's the truth, though, Mark. Quote, here is the truth. While at the University of Florida and now at the Ohio State University, I have always followed proper reporting protocols and procedures when I have learned of an incident involving a student athlete, coach, or member of our staff by elevating the issues to the proper channels. Here we go. And I did so regarding the Zach Smith incident in 2015. I take that responsibility very seriously, and any suggestion to the contrary is simply false.
But he didn't know. He just found out about it
via text.
A couple
nights ago.
Yeah, he just found out about
Startled
it.
Startled in the middle of the night, like Paul Revere.
Hold on. So he took the proper steps, but he just found out about it. What are you talking about, Urban?
I'm not good with numbers, but these dates don't seem to line up. Now, let's take this as I'm going to pause this statement from Urban Meyer. I want to hear from Zach Smith. This is Zach Smith. This is not the full interview. We don't have access to the full interview. Full interviews airing soon on SportsCenter. But listen to this clip, and Zach corroborates.
In October of 2015, I was on the road recruiting in Virginia Beach. I got a phone call as I'm standing on the field from Gene Smith, our athletic director. One, he doesn't call often. Every now and then he does, so I knew something was going on. He said, Zach, we need you to get on the next flight back. You need to get back here. I said, okay, what's going on? He said, well, apparently your wife's making accusations of domestic abuse up in Powell. We just got a phone call, so we need you to get back here.
So that was the end of October 2015, around Halloween.
Yeah, right, whenever it happened. I think it was end of October. So I did that. I flew back. I went with my divorce attorney, Dennis Horvath, and I went and volunteered to go meet with the Powell police. That's what we just talked about. Met with them, went through all the charges, walked away from it, and it seemed like this is just a bunch of accusations that aren't going to go anywhere because I didn't do anything illegal. And so I went back and went then to work. We had a practice. I went to practice, and Urban pulled me off the practice field. And when he pulled me off the practice field, he said, what the hell's going on? What is this?
Huh! So I guess he must have forgot that conversation he had in 2015 talking about the issue with Zach Smith on the field, pulled him off of practice, and face-to-face asked him what is going on.
Urban liar.
Well done. Let's continue on this Urban Meyer statement. Now that you've heard Zach Smith saying that, okay, I talked to Urban in 2015. He asked me what was going on.
Yes.
And now Urban has also admitted that, in, at least in the sense of the statement that, hey, I reported it in 2015 to the proper protocols.
But he didn't know about it.
But you didn't know about it. And listen, I don't need to get into the specifics of whether what type of abuse happened, how valid it is, pictures shared, charges, whatever that may be. Now, this is very similar to a lot of scandals in not only sports, but in politics and just in general. Mob, whatever. La Costa Nostra, whatever.
Yeah.
It's not the crime. It's the cover-up. You came out, you said you didn't know, and now you're saying today that you do know, and Zach is corroborating.
Yeah.
Now, is this timing not a little odd, Mark Seidel?
Just a little bit.
Just maybe a concerted effort to change the narrative and control the message with statements released within a few hours of one another on the same day, saying the same thing, essentially like, hey, we're both saying we knew. Forget what Urban said at the press conference. And that's at the Big Ten Media Day. And that's essentially what Urban finishes the rest of this letter with. The power of, quote, the power of what I say and how I say it, especially regarding sensitive and serious domestic issues, has never been more evident than now. My words, whether in a reply to a reporter's question or in addressing a personal issue, must be clear, compassionate, and most of all, completely accurate. Okay, well, I guess that's better than saying I misspoke or I lied.
Uh-huh.
I guess saying that I didn't choose my words more carefully, but this isn't like a slip up. You straight out, flat out denied that you had any understanding of an issue in 2015 regarding your wide receiver coach and his ex-wife. Also, a person that you knew had domestic issues because you essentially counseled them in 2009.
In 2009,
right.
Exactly.
Right.
So this was not something new that. You know, it wasn't the first time that these issues had been brought up. You know, I get it. It's a kid who's been with you for a long time. You know, I'm sure you have that almost fatherly mentor relationship with him. The last thing you want to do is get someone that you are very close to in trouble.
Exactly.
That's human nature.
We get that.
You know. That's just the way it's human nature. But at some point in time, as a leader of young men whose families are entrusting you to develop their young men into men, to turn
right.
their
this
young
isn't,
men
this isn't
into
just about
men.
Athletics. This
yes.
is about character.
Yes, this is. I mean, this is. You know, all these kids that go play football for Urban Meyer on a 100-man roster, you know. 25 of those guys will eventually play in the NFL. The other 75 are getting their free education, and you know, hopefully
might be your neighbor.
Yeah, and hopefully using the time spent with Urban Meyer and the other coaches to these parents are hoping and wishing that these are the guys that are going to turn their sons into men.
Right. Well, if you're expected to hear more from Urban Meyer, don't. Hold your breath. I'm going to continue this and finish up this statement. Quote, I understand that there are more questions to be answered, and I look forward to doing just that with the independent investigators retained by the university, and I will cooperate fully with them. Oh, so more constructed, focused narratives from you uh-huh. and whoever. So no more public questions because you don't want to slip up again.
Nope.
You understand how serious this is. Right? I mean, that's the vibe I'm getting.
I will only be releasing statements that have been written and carefully checked, and I won't answer direct questions you want to ask me about.
And just in case you were curious of who that board is or who that investigative group is, it's a six-person group. It was just announced last night. They've retained them to look into this issue and to find out answers. This group is composed of three current members of the Board of Trustees, Alex Fisher, Janet Porter, and Alex Shumate. I believe Shumate is a huge donor to Ohio State, and some of the others may be either. I'm not well-versed in Ohio State necessarily, but uh-huh. So the three Ohio State board members And then also, the other three, former Ohio House Speaker Joanne Davidson, former Acting U.S. Deputy Attorney General Craig Morford, and former U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Ohio, Carter Stewart. So a couple Ohio people and three board members of Ohio State. Now listen, like I said, this is not my wheelhouse, but I'm just going to say gut feeling. I don't like it.
Can you trust that they are going to delve as deep as they should? Can you trust that they are going to make sure that all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed in this investigation?
I don't know. We'll see. Think back to Tressel, but I don't know. I don't know.
It just seems like, if you're going to have an investigation into what's going on, it should be outside of people from that are affiliated with Ohio State.
Yeah, well, just another run-of-the-mill slow news day in the middle of the summer here in Las Vegas.
Yep.
Got the Urban Meyer scandal. Football is back. And guess who else is back? Conor McGregor. We're going to get more to Conor McGregor and his return coming up with Andreas Hale from the Sporting News up next.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews. Now, back to Cofield and Company in the Finley Toyota Studios.
Who's getting better here in this round, though?
Oh, man. He's done. He's done.
It is all over. History has been made. Conor McGregor is the UFC lightweight champion.
$4.2 billion has come to the sofa. Where's that second belt? Go backstage and grab that belt somewhere. No. To absolutely nobody. The double champ does what the he wants.
The double champ does whatever the bleep he wants. Yeah, that sounds about right. Conor McGregor taking the belt, the lightweight belt, his second belt at that point. He was then the featherweight champion after starching Jose Aldo in 13 seconds, went out to New York and took out Eddie Alvarez. And since then, only thing we've heard about from Conor McGregor was fighting Floyd Mayweather, air quotes, fighting Conor McGregor. But today, there was a press conference in Los Angeles. I was watching the press conference before the show. Dana White asks, hey, are there any more questions? They announced Nate Diaz and Dustin Poirier. They have Darren Till and Tyron Woodley out there. Got all the dignitaries and all the people in MMA that you would come to see. But there was no Conor. Assumed there was no Conor. Well, turns out, as I'm driving on over here, that wasn't exactly the case. They were slow rolling us. Old gambling term. Turns out, the video package starts to roll. The music starts to hit. Images start to show. And oh my God, the truth has set us free. Conor McGregor is returning to talk about this and all things combat sports. Good friend of mine, good friend of the show, the one and only Andreas Hale from thesportingnews.com. Andreas, how you doing, buddy?
Man, I'm well, man. Big day in combat sports, right?
Dude, it's a pretty historic day when you think about... I'm trying to think about, and I don't know, and we're going to talk to Adam Hill coming up. He's on the ground in Los Angeles. We're going to be talking to him at 5:30. I'm really curious to hear from him as well, because I think he might have some more inside information about, and we can speculate, how this deal got done and just how much money and what bonuses Conor McGregor might be getting from this deal, because you know he didn't just go from making, what, 80, 60, 70 million against
99,
Floyd?
99 million.
Oh, 99, is that it?
99.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
At this point, I don't even know what the difference between 70 and 99 is, but hey, I'm sure it matters a lot to him. So he makes $100 million. You know he wasn't coming back for peanuts.
No, I mean, what was his biggest disclosed payday? With 3 million after that? Disclosed?
Yeah, and that's disclosed, but
so,
yeah.
So, yeah, obviously he's made more, but mm-hmm. clearly it's got to be, I would have to imagine we're looking at $20, $30 million.
Disclosed.
Which eclipses right. just about the entire payroll for the 2018 for just about every fighter combined, what Conor should be making in this fight. It's insane. But I felt like they had to get the deal done, right? I mean, they were at a point where...
It was out there. It was in the ethos. It was put out and birthed into the world at some point. Yeah, you got to follow up.
So the thing about it is that we're awarding bad behavior here as well.
Hmm?
I mean, we have to go back to what happened recently in New York where Conor Storms throws the dolly through the window, injures two fighters, and now he's being rewarded for bad behavior. No punishment. Dana was like, would you want to be in the Conor McGregor business? You remember this.
This is the worst thing that's ever happened in MMA or in UFC history.
Or the best thing that's ever happened in UFC history. Controversy sells, and now we know what we're dealing with. Conor McGregor is going to come back. He's probably going to smash every pay-per-view record fighting Nurmagomedov. It's going to be huge, and everybody's excited for it. I'm just wondering how much of the soul the UFC had to give up for this fight.
Well, no matter what, it's a good day for fighters, right? So in turn, I feel like on some level, it's a good day for the future of the sport.
It depends.
Yeah.
Is Conor sticking around after this? Like, if you pay me $30 million, because he's been away spending money, $99 million, is he going to fight again, or is he going to take another hiatus?
Does it matter? Hasn't he already done what he needs to do in terms of branding MMA and the UFC into a new era? The massive pay-per-view draw that was obviously the Mayweather fight. That was half McGregor. We saw Mayweather before fight Berto. Crickets. Crickets. No one cared.
While true, Conor McGregor's done a great job of branding himself.
Yeah, that's true.
The UFC suffered without him. When he fights, yeah, they're going to do great numbers, but the following pay-per-view is not going to do much of anything.
Yeah.
So that's the curious thing, because it's Conor McGregor's in business for himself. He always has been. He always will be. So the pay-per-view is going to do excellent numbers, but then what?
Yeah.
The UFC has not done a great job building other stars. And just, you know, a few minutes ago, both Dustin Poirier and Nate Diaz, who are fighting in the New York card, have tweeted that they want off of that card because they feel like they've been lied to. There's anarchy.
Wow.
There is straight anarchy in the UFC right now, because you hear Conor McGregor's coming back. He gets an immediate title shot. Poirier's been fighting everybody. He's had an amazing run in 2018.
Right.
He said he wouldn't pick up the phone unless he got a title shot.
Which Nate Diaz is a nice consolation prize to that.
But it's not a title shot.
Right. And Nate Diaz similarly said basically the same stuff, like, call me when the money's right.
Exactly.
Right. Call me when I have a reason to come out of bed. I don't, was the old Naomi Campbell quote, or I don't get out of bed for 100. I don't remember. I'm dating myself there a little bit. But no, I feel like that currently applies to the era we're living with Conor McGregor. And when I talk about it being better for the future of the sport, that's kind of what I mean. Now, I get what you're saying. Is it? But what I mean by that is fighters can finally realize that if they have that value, knowing your value is truly half the battle with the UFC. And if you have that value and you truly believe in it, you know, you can go to bat for yourself. You can do the right things to where, you know, you might not get exactly what you want, but people, I think fighters are waking up for the first time in a very, and maybe ever, in the true way. You had people that had come before, Randy Couture, Tito Ortiz, some other guys who put the coals to the UFC, but not like this.
No, but the interesting thing is Conor McGregor is a unique enigma. Where the guy is, you know, self-promoted. Like, I mean, honestly, I mean, the UFC did nothing for him in terms of that. That was all his mouth in his fighting.
Yeah.
There are a few fighters that are the same as Conor McGregor that can talk the talk and walk it at the same time. You look at who's fighting this weekend. Demetrius Johnson, who is considered by many the pound-for-pound best fighter in the world. He's the co-main event on a UFC pay-per-view.
Yeah. And so, Lord knows he's had his time and his opportunity to draw. He's been a Fox main eventer. He's been a pay-per-view main eventer. They've tried to get him on every platform to get interest in him, and for whatever reason, right, he doesn't have that draw.
And most fighters don't.
Yeah.
You know, the reality is Ronda Rousey was a once-in-a-lifetime individual, you know, ushered in the females in the UFC, and she did major numbers. Amanda Nunes hasn't done anything since.
Zip.
You know, and I mean, you look at the rest, you know, Daniel Cormier is finally getting his time to shine against Brock Lesnar, which will probably happen, but Brock doesn't deserve a title shot. So it's really about personalities more than the athleticism in the octagon. Conor McGregor is just a unique combination of both, which makes this fight with Nurmagomedov very interesting and intriguing for a hardcore fan, but everybody just wants to see Conor McGregor come back. That's all you want.
We're happy it's in Vegas, right?
Oh, yeah, we're definitely happy it's in Vegas.
October 6th here in Las Vegas, UFC 229?
Yes, sir.
I feel like that's right?
That is correct, yes.
That's going to be happening. It's interesting. I mean, as much as I felt like it was going to happen, and I tweeted it out last night, and I made clues about it, I had been hearing things. I think we'd all have been hearing things, but we weren't sure. Now that it's here, it's exciting. Because out of all the people that you could want to see, not only from a Styles make fight standpoint, okay, I think that goes without saying, that this is just a really fun stylistic matchup. But you want to talk legitimacy, a two division champion in Conor McGregor, an undefeated wrecking ball in Khabib Nurmagomedov. I don't get it. You got those two, but then you have the coolest narrative here. You have the Russia-Ireland narrative, which Khabib said in a post-fight interview, Ireland's got 2 million, Russia's got, I don't remember the number, he said 50 million, like, let's do this, or whatever he said to Conor. He's already put the Conor versus Ireland narrative out there, Ireland versus Russia narrative out there. And then to take it a step further, Conor was just at the World Cup earlier in July meeting with Vladimir Putin and saying, like, praising the president of Russia that, hey, this is the greatest guy, what a great leader, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there are a lot of cool underlying narratives and little, like, sociopolitical things at play here. This isn't just a fight, and that's when fighting is the best, when it mixes culture, power, all the stuff that we love about sports.
What do we say? Last time I was here, everything is pro wrestling? Everything is pro wrestling. Conor McGregor versus Khabib Nurmagomedov is pro wrestling at its finest. You have the narrative, the national narrative. You have the feud of the dolly getting thrown through the bus window. You have the hotel incident with Artem Lobov and Khabib. You have so much stuff here that we haven't even got to the fight yet, and people are just going to be so excited. But that's how you sell a fight.
Speaking of everything is pro wrestling, did you see that news that Glenn Jacobs, a.k.a.
O'Kane.
A.K.A. Kane, the big red machine in WWE. He actually won a mayoral race in a Tennessee district in Knox County. We're going to have Kane the mayor in Tennessee.
Ha, he's been through hell, right? The only pro wrestling fans would get that. I'm sorry.
As you wear your Austin 316 shirt.
Of course. But, I mean, we have a pro wrestler as a mayor. Look, everything is pro wrestling.
Well, technically, we have a pro wrestler as a president, too. I mean, he did make his run in WWE, Donald Trump.
He is a Hall of Famer, too.
He is a Hall of Famer. He is a Hall of Famer in the WWE. That is Hall of Famer Donald John Trump, 100%. And, let's not forget, Jesse Ventura. So, when you say everything is pro wrestling, you're not wrong.
No, everything is pro wrestling.
So let's get back to Poirier and Nate, because this is something I didn't know about. It's a developing story. It's happening right now. They were penciled in. First of all, this was a huge deal to begin with. Last night, we find out that Nate Diaz is returning to the UFC. He hasn't fought in 2 years. Right. Same time since Conor McGregor hasn't fought, right? Essentially. Just about the same. They weren't the last to fight one another, but, well, Nate's case. But So now they find out that Conor McGregor's returning. They had a nice little slot penciled in for the co-main event of the New York card at UFC 230
right
in November, but now you're telling me they don't want to fight on that.
I mean, they're pissed off. I mean, rightfully so. You got two guys. You know, Nate wanted Conor because that's the big money fight. Dustin said, I'm not answering the phone unless it's for a title shot. And then I'm sure that both have been asking, and Dana's like, no, Conor's not coming back. He's got to keep this under wraps. And then they do the press conference, and they look up, and there's a video package that says Conor McGregor's back.
So actually, let me backtrack just a little bit, because I didn't get to see it. So illuminate it for me. Paint that picture. For me, it felt like a real slow roll in the sense that, hey, we're not doing anything. John Morgan from MMA Junkie asked a question about it, and Dana played coy, so I was like, all right, well, it's not going to get announced today. Boy, were we wrong. So how did we find out? How did the public find out if they were watching the stream about what happened?
I mean, literally, right after, no more questions, Dana said, hold on, I've got a video package for you. And that's the moment that everybody was like, oh. And then
really?
It rolled out, and then you saw kind of they played the bus incident. All the stuff that we saw.
They played the bus incident. Andreas.
Yes, I'm telling you that they played into this.
Now, listen, I don't know why I'm surprised. Excuse me, I'm getting closer to the mic as I sit here and freak out. I don't know why I'm surprised that they used and weaponized the assault on that bus, but I am. Am I an idiot? I've been here 10 years covering this sport. Am I a moron? You can say it. It's okay.
I said the same thing. Like, I was a guy who said that Conor should be punished because if you let the inmates run the asylum, they become the warden. And that's what Conor's on the verge of doing, is becoming the warden. So what he's doing is he's saying, I can basically do whatever I want, and you're going to pay me whatever I want. You know, we haven't disclosed what Conor's got coming into this fight, but I'm sure it's a yacht full of money. So bad behavior pays. And now they're using it to promote the fight as well. I mean, if you're a guy like Darren Till or Tyron Woodley, or you look at what Colby Covington did, he's out there, and, you know, Donald Trump with the interim title that he's about to get stripped of in less than 60 days, bad behavior does pay. Yeah. Controversy sells. Being a good fighter does not.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you got to win some fights, but be a jerk.
Let's get more to that. Let's get more to interim welterweight champion, I guess, Colby Covington. He did make a trip out to Washington, D.C. with UFC President Dana White. He did meet with Donald Trump. And there's plenty more to get to from this. We got potentially Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather teaming up to take on Mikey Garcia. Not tag team action, but I'll let you figure that out. Plenty more. Got Andreas Hale here from thesportingnews.com, editor, combat sports. He's going to be chopping up with us for the next 15 or so minutes. Make sure you stick around here on Cofield & Company.
Visit Cofield's Corner on lvsportsnetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews. Now, back to Cofield and Company in the Finley Toyota Studios.
Oh! He's there! Arrow breaks down! Dillashaw trying to finish this fight! And it! Whoa! TJ Dillashaw has done it! Dillashaw now a two-time UFC bantamweight champion! He wrests the belt away from Cody Garbrandt!
That was bantamweight champion TJ Dillashaw. putting challenger Cody Garbrandt away. Well, actually, that's not true. At the time, Cody was a champion. TJ was challenging. Now, here, tomorrow, Saturday, UFC 227, the roles have reversed. TJ Dillashaw is the champion. Cody Garbrandt is the challenger. Just, you know, we're not going to get into it too much, Dre, but who do you like in that fight?
TJ Dillashaw.
Yeah, dude.
Here's the reason. And TJ is the guy who makes the proper adjustments. If you look at the first fight, he made all the adjustments necessary in the second round after he got hurt, finished off Cody Garbrandt. I don't know if Cody Garbrandt's ego can deal with that knockout loss and have him come back stronger in the rematch.
Well, how about his chin? This is a guy who's gotten starched in the amateurs.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, starched, put out cold. And he has a long Golden Gloves history, amateur boxing. He spars hard. And here's the key. TJ Dillashaw hits hard, especially at bantamweight.
Absolutely. And again, you know, you look at him in rematches, the Henan Burrell rematch, you know, he looked exceptional. The Rafael Assensio rematch, he looked exceptional. I expect the same thing going into Cody Garbrandt rematch. There's a lot of, you know, vitriol here, but I think TJ is going to remain calm, cool, and poised, and pick him apart.
I'm going to tell you this. There's a lot of sharps out there that are looking for lines and to exploit lines. The last I had checked, it was sitting around minus 115, a damn near even fight. Okay, now I'm not saying Cody Garbrandt won't win, okay? I got a lot of respect for Cody. He's a very dangerous fighter, very violent, great finishing instinct, all those things. Very good fighter. But when you give me an even fight, this is very similar to Stipe Miocic and Daniel Cormier. When I saw Cormier sitting at plus 220, first of all, I thought that was an even fight. When I saw him at plus 220, I couldn't empty or tell my friends to empty their bank accounts quick enough. Seeing TJ Dillashaw and Cody Garbrandt even, it's pretty much the same thing. Like, TJ should probably be somewhere around like plus 220, plus 210. And the fact that he's not, go get your money, Vegas.
I agree. I agree 100%. Yeah. Again, you know, TJ's just, he's an exceptional talent. I think he's been undervalued for so long, even when he was champion. He's one of the best out there.
Speaking of lines, got this coming down from our pal John Murray out at the LV Superbook. The line has been released. The initial line on the Conor McGregor, Khabib Nurmagomedov fight happening here October 6th in Las Vegas at T-Mobile. The line is Conor plus 150. Khabib, minus 180. When you hear that, initial thoughts?
Go put your money on Conor now because that line is absolutely going to shift. Because, I mean, look.
Now, I was expecting Conor to be a bigger underdog.
Think about the Irish money that's going to come in. Please keep in mind that Conor McGregor was like, what, a plus 400 against Floyd Mayweather?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of Conor believers
you know what?
Here.
That fight should have been more like plus 9,000. Yeah. But I'm not. This isn't hindsight. We went all around the media landscape saying this exact thing before the fight. So this isn't a hindsight thing, right? So you're not wrong. When that Irish money comes in, especially during fight week, you're gonna have a lot more Irish money than Russian money. Or there's gonna be sharp money on Khabib.
Oh yeah.
100%.
Absolutely.
But I think they're gonna wait.
Yeah, so the fun thing here is I'm never betting against Conor McGregor ever again in an MMA fight. Boxing, absolutely. I'll bet against him every day or twice on Sunday.
Every single fight he fights.
But the fact that you knocked out Jose Aldo in 13 seconds, who was the number 1 or 2 pound-for-pound fighter of in mixed martial arts at the time, fighting Khabib Nurmagomedov, who has some holes in his striking that Conor, I think, can exploit, that's an interesting fight.
Yeah.
And at a plus 150, I'll take it.
Yeah. All right, so we talked about it before we went to break. Colby Covington, we're here with Andreas Hale, by the way. SportingNews.com editor, combat sports editor. Thank him for taking the time. We talked about this right before we went to break, and that's Colby Covington and Dana White. They made a trip to Washington, D.C. They brought Colby's interim welterweight title with him. But the thing that's funny about this, and like, listen, he said, I'm going to meet with the president, unlike those Philadelphia Eagles, which, you know what? Like, yeah, exactly. Like, listen, I don't think it doesn't take a genius to follow our social media accounts and figure out where we stand politically and socially, but even us, we both kind of chuckle at the absurdity of this and the kind of the transparent gimmick that Covington is running, but, you know, so is Trump's gimmick. They're kind of both transparent in their gimmicks. But, you know, it stands to reason why you're just shaking your head over there. Go ahead, Andreas.
I mean, it's one of those things where I'm not worried about the individual. I'm worried about the people who follow the individual. Yeah. They're a little bit more scarier.
Yeah.
And you look at a guy like Colby Covington who's buying into his gimmick 100%, and then you find out who the fans are who ride with him, and that's more frightening to me than Colby Covington. Yeah. There are people that are cheering this guy. Like today, Tyron Woodley's getting booed for being Tyron Woodley. Yeah. Didn't say anything out of pocket.
Oh, no. Well, when you say he was got booed for being Tyron Woodley, he gets booed for being black. Like, I hate to be that, to simplify it that much, but this is MMA. This is the bingo halls of the South. Like, this is where this sport came up. Now, I'm not saying it's inherently racist. I'm just saying when you have a fighter that has the quickest championship knockout in welterweight history, and that's Tyron Woodley knocking out Robbie Lawler. He can be an extremely exciting fighter, but he receives these just plethora of boos wherever he goes, and then you juxtapose it to the guy he was supposed to be fighting. Colby Covington is very much a MAGA guy. I said this. I've been doing shows on Sirius with this. This is Ferguson, Missouri versus Black Lives Matter. When you're talking about Covington versus Woodley. Excuse me, you're talking about Black Lives Matter versus MAGA.
Yeah.
And it is basically 2018 put in a cage.
Yeah, I'm glad you said it since I didn't have to. Yeah, people boo Tyron Woodley because he's black. And people who are going to disagree with that, I don't care what you say. There is a reason why people boo Daniel Cormier. Yeah. Good African-Americans who are upstanding individuals, they tend to get booed. Yeah. It's a frightening thing. Like, MMA is still a sport that chants USA at foreign fighters. Why do we need to do that in 2018 when this country's built on immigrants? Like, it's ridiculous. And that's we don't need to get political.
Right.
But you got a guy like Colby Covington. Tyron Woodley didn't get to meet Barack Obama. Daniel Cormier, John Jones, Demetrius Johnson, none of them got to meet the president. But an interim champion, a guy who got a gift title, because it shouldn't even have been for an interim title.
Well, what's great, he's not going to have that. First of all, I don't think he was supposed to have that belt.
No.
Because they announced that. They took it away and they announced that Tyron and Woodley and Till was going to be the fight, and that was going to be for the welterweight championship. And sorry, Covington. For whatever reason, Covington didn't want to fight. He's I don't know.
He said he had to have nasal surgery or something of that sort. Yeah. But, you know, I guess Dana made it clear that he's still the interim champion until the first punch gets thrown.
Okay.
Which, there's your logic and why he was able to show up with Donald Trump, and Trump put his hands on the interim title. So interim titles are just getting handed out to everybody, including Donald Trump.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
All right, so one of these things, and this has been happening a lot, and before we get you out of here, I can only offer a certain amount of perspective on these issues, and you can obviously elaborate a little bit more. And, of course, I'm going to be talking about Cody Garbrandt here. You look at Major League Baseball in the last couple months, more specifically the last couple weeks. You had the issue with Sonny Gray, Josh Hader. I'm missing one. It was like a plethora of...
And Trey Turner was
Trey
recent.
Trey Turner, yes, thank you. Of just resurfaced old tweets. Well, Cody Garbrandt, the main event, one half of the main event this Saturday's UFC 227, he had some old tweets that resurfaced, and there is a lot of them, and these tweets are just essentially a bunch of N-words. It's with the A and not the hard E-R. I don't know if this matters, but a lot of the dates are... August 2012, whole team of killers, I'm the coach, N-word. That's that N-word song, summer of 09. I'm screaming, free my N-word Frank. N-words say they always looking for me, but they never there. I'll be over, N-word. When my dreams started to crumble, N-word started to fade. I'll be shining again. Now, he says that he was asked about this during Media Day this week, and he had said essentially that, hey, I was a teenager. Well, that's not exactly the case. You weren't just a teenager. You were actually over 21 in a couple of these tweets. I mean, it's easy to go back and check the timestamps. And he really dismissed it. He's like, that's it. I'm not going to talk anymore about it. When you see this stuff happening and you see people try to justify it, or even in Cody's case, he didn't really justify it. He just said, hey, I'm a teenager. Next question. Well, you weren't. And you didn't allow for a follow-up. So just your general thoughts on all this.
I mean, it's kind of disgusting behavior by people who don't understand the power of words. Now, look, everybody's done something stupid. I guarantee you dig up dirt on everybody. Nobody's hands are clean.
Oh, I was just talking about it the other day with Cofield in terms of I went after Barstool one day, and I had to scrub my social media because they found me using the F word, not the traditional F word, the homosexual F word. I don't know what I can get away with in saying, so I don't want to say it. But, yeah, just making mistakes, thinking you're funnier than you are, not fully understanding the ramifications. And this was like 2009, 2010. I was in my early 20s, but... not an excuse. Like, you're a moron. Like, don't use stupid words and apologize them for them accordingly.
So it's a really simple solution here, right? Like, I don't think Cody did it to be malicious. Obviously, he says, I mean, it's problematic because he said, I grew up around black people and Mexicans, and that's how we talk to each other. It's problematic that the African-Americans that were with him said it was cool and gave him a pass.
Well, I can speak from that in terms of I'm from the Midwest and Indiana and Ohio. I think it's places where Cody and I are from, kind of cut from the same cloth. And I feel, and this is a generalization, so I want to be careful, but I feel like it's different there in terms of they're willing to give, and when I say they, I mean my minorities are willing to give passes or at least seem like they are because of the demographics that surround them.
Yeah.
Meaning they're kind of outnumbered.
And whereas, you know, it's a small population of people in that specific area. When it gets brought to the light, the bottom line is you need to apologize, take accountability, and move on.
Right.
Because those kind of apologies, not even apologies, those kind of explanations where you're like, it's just lyrics. You're kind of blaming it on hip-hop music, or you're blaming it on your upbringing, or you're lying and saying that you were a teenager. Dude, just say I was young, I was dumb, and I won't let it happen again. Like, I don't understand why people have to justify what they did. Just say it was dumb. We've all done dumb things.
Right.
Now, the way...
That's a universal, right? We've all had to apologize. Look, we've all said stupid stuff.
Nobody's hands are clean. So just take accountability for your actions. Don't get upset when it gets brought to light, because you said it. Right. And you knew better. The one thing about Cody Garbrandt, you're not like a sheltered kid. The thing that we've learned about social media, everything else, especially with the history of the N-word, is that it has such harmful, you know, it brings out the worst in people. And for you to use it and not take accountability for it because it may affect other people, just because the people you're around would say it's cool, doesn't mean I'm going to think it's cool. Right. Or anybody else that's, you know, in another state, in New York or Alabama or Washington, D.C., is going to think it's cool. You've offended somebody.
Well, and also, there's not such thing as universal passes. Like, my black friends told me I could. That doesn't... Your black friend doesn't speak for all black people.
No.
Like, I feel pretty comfortable saying that. And I think back to a situation in MMA. Mike Perry, who's going to be fighting Donald Cerrone in Denver at the UFC's 25th anniversary show, he is friends with Tyron Woodley, a black man, welterweight champion. And Mike found out he had like 1 or 2% African. He did one of those genealogy tests and found out he was like 1 or 2% African American. And he said Tyron gave him an okay to use the N-word. And so he was on social media tweeting out the N-word.
And what's crazy about this is that we're digging up Cody's tweets, but we're not asking Mike Perry about what he's saying today. That's the crazy thing. Like, you can dig out all the tweets about Cody Garbrandt. Yes, from 2012. Well, how about we ask Mike Perry why he's using it today? And I guarantee it has nothing to do with that little heritage thing that he found out. He's been saying it way before that. Now he's just getting caught up. So it's just sensitivity issues. People are going to dig up dirt. Look, everybody, you've done something dumb. Take accountability. Move on. Apologize. That's the best thing you can do.
Now, I remember you're pretty close with Tyron. You have an open communication with him, and you kind of asked him, at least on a public platform, you asked him on Twitter, "Yo, what's up with this? Are you going to make a comment?" Did you ever get anything from him?
No. I was just in L.A. for the Garcia Easter fight, and we were supposed to meet up, but he was coming this week because he thought I was there this week. So we haven't had a chance to actually talk about it, so I'm not going to say that he didn't want to speak about it. It's just timing just didn't happen because I was like, is this your boy? That's what I asked him. This your boy? Tell him chill out.
Gave him the this your boy quote.
Yeah, I was like, is that your man's? Is that your man's? And he was like, no. And that was how he responded to the tweet. And I was like, okay.
I guess that's a good enough answer at the time being, but yeah, hopefully a face-to-face. All right, before we get you out of here, I talked about it before we went to break. Just real quick, I saw something about potentially Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather joining forces. What's the story on this?
Manny's called out Floyd Mayweather. Floyd Mayweather said, I'm not fighting you, but I will promote you because you need money, and I know you need money.
And I need fighters.
Yeah, and sure, I need fighters. And Manny Pacquiao said he's a free agent. Mm-hmm. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt. Is Floyd just trying to be in the business of being a promoter? Should Pacquiao fight Garcia? I think that would be a great, fun fight. Because
Mikey Garcia is the fight they're talking about?
Yeah, that's who they're talking about, Mikey Garcia. Because Mikey Garcia wants to fight Errol Spence, who's two weight classes above him, and that's a frightening fight where somebody might get killed. But Mikey Garcia is daring to be great, which is something that a lot of fighters don't do, so I commend him for that. But yeah, the Pacquiao fight, I think, is a much better fight for him. And if Floyd Mayweather wants to get in the business and Pacquiao can figure it out because Pacquiao needs money, sure, why not?
Andreas, you're the best, man. I love having you on here. I know we're going to have you on plenty more down the road. What you got coming up? What you got coming down the pipeline?
Just work, man.
All right.
You know, just work. And August is relatively slow. September kicks up into high gear. And then obviously we got McGregor.
Then all McGregor after that. All right. That's Andreas Hale, sportingnews.com. You can find him at Twitter, @Andreas.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. When we come back, plenty more here on Cofield & Company.